around about the same time, John Campbell, who's a professor of archaeology in Australia, was also thinking about broad-scale human processes in Earth and space. So he was interested in SETI as well, and he also worked on Indigenous archaeology and maritime archaeology and archaeoastronomy, which is the study of on the Earth of the material culture that enabled humans to observe or engage with celestial phenomena, I guess. So there was a particular catalyst. So Beth had been doing that work in 1999. I had my revelation about changing my career in the direction of space, I think 2001 or two. And in 2003, there was going to be a World Archaeological Congress meeting in Washington, D.C. So these only happen once every 4 years. The World Archaeological Congress is probably the biggest global archaeological organization. And John Campbell had organized a whole day's session, which included archaeoastronomy and also space archaeology. And he and Beth and I all gave presentations in this session. And this was sort of like, this was like reaching a critical mass, a very small one, but it brought the idea of space archaeology to the attention of the broader World Archaeological Congress community. And we actually managed to get a Space Heritage Task Force created. And the task force probably was most effective in just existing and demonstrating that the World Archaeological Congress took this seriously. And we probably need to produce a report by the for the next Congress, which is the things that have happened in that time period have been so much that this report is going to be quite a big one. So from this point, there was a visibility, there was a credibility, I guess, created by the World Archaeological Congress backing. And this enabled Beth and I and a number of others who are interested in this area, I guess, to kind of go forth and continue our research without people thinking we were perhaps too much on the fringe. So there was always a risk that, I mean, archaeologists attract people who are, who perhaps often hold beliefs that are inconsistent with our current knowledge of human evolution and development. And these sort of fuzzy borderlines between what might be considered science and what might be considered folk theories or conspiracy theories are quite contentious. So there was always a risk that people would think that this was something a little bit on the fringe and not take it seriously. So we kind of had to work to develop this as a serious subfield of archaeology, I guess. The other thing I should mention was in 2001, there was I think it was a conference session in the UK on archaeology and science fiction. And in that session, Greg Feuer from Ireland gave a paper which was later published in the volume proposing a system of sort of heritage listing for places on the Moon and Mars. So that was another key part in how the ideas sort of unfolded. And since then, Beth O'Leary has been successful in raising the awareness about lunar heritage, and she's just published a book with Lisa Westwood and Dwayne Milford Johnson called The Final Mission, Preserving Apollo's Heritage. And in Australia, Dirk Spennerman has done work both on ethical issues of around the lunar heritage sites and on Martian landing and crash sites. John Campbell is retired now, but he's continued to write things relating to sort of the broader universal context. And Justin Walsh in the US has looked at planetary protection And he and I are currently working on a project on the International Space Station. So there's a few people around. It's interesting to me that now you could say that after, well, let's say 2003, so it's about, I don't know, 15 years since space archaeology really took off. So in that time, huge number of publications, the Handbook of Space Engineering, Archaeology and Heritage, edited by Beth O'Leary and Anne Garrison-Darren, a few other books. Oh, and PJ Capilotti, how could I forget him? So he's also someone working in that sort of exploration area, a little bit like Ben Finney. And in 2010, he published sort of a catalogue of historical and archaeological catalogue of places throughout the solar system. So there's kind of a small bunch of people who have consistently been working in this area. I'm always surprised that more people have not got involved. And I'm not sure if that's because looking at the archaeology of the contemporary past is still a relatively small field in itself, I guess. And you could look at space archaeology as sort of a subset of that. It may partially be because in order to do this, you do at some point need to engage with the engineering and science literature. So that might put people off, I'm not sure. Or it might be, well, I don't really know why it is, but I keep trying to get my students here inspired in it and wanting to do things. But there's enough of us working now, I think, and we have a sufficiently solid body of work behind us to have this on, a very good footing. What's interesting to me is that the aerospace community keeps reinventing the wheel. So we've seen this a number of times over the years. Someone in the space or aerospace community has a bright idea about space heritage and somehow absolutely fails to do the most basic literature review, and which I do find I do find quite incredible. And sometimes we engage with them and attempt to sort of have some interesting dialogues, and I think this is really important because a lot of this stuff is the sort of more personal heritage of aerospace and engineering communities. So their engagement, I think, is really important. But I do kind of wish they would maybe do a bit of Googling around space archaeology and space heritage before they decided that they could, go ahead and create a whole new field when it's already been done.